Mirror for Women. Every Monday at this time, topics and personalities are presented that reflect a variety of subjects. Today's speaker is Dr. G.W. Palethorpe, and her subject is Surrealism and Psychology. Dr. Palethorpe is England's leading exponent of the Surrealist movement in art, but her approach to it has been through the fields of science and psychology. In England, she founded the Institute for the Scientific Treatment of Delinquency, and has published writings on both psychology and surrealism. Dr. Palethorpe.
Many of my listeners may not have heard of surrealism before, so I will begin by giving you an idea of what it is. It is a modern form of art which started in France in 1919. It was born out of Dadaism, which immediately preceded it. So first, a word on Dadaism. Dadaism sprang into being during the last war. A number of European artists, incensed and maddened to despair by the imbecility of war and at the governments responsible for the war, decided as a council of despair to act as they felt the people in power were acting. It was a method of meeting the enemy with his own weapon. They demonstrated to the world the imbecility of the social organization by throwing onto canvas and paper images of madness and by mad behavior. It was like a skin eruption in the body of the human, the throwing out from the social body of the toxins that were poisoning the whole system. I do not mean by this that the Dadaists were themselves aware of what was taking place. They were merely easing themselves up of pent-up emotions. They were only aware that they wanted to act as insanely as they felt those who governed them were acting. But it was their own inner psychological tension which was the prime cause of this eruption. They were projecting their inner disharmonies onto the outside world. Dadaism was a destructive movement. It was a madness which lingered for a short while only in the world of art and then quickly died. Out of the ashes of Dadaism, Surrealism was born. Because of dissatisfaction with Dadaism, André Breton and several others started to experiment with automatic writing in 1919. André Breton had worked as an orderly in the psychiatric wards of war hospitals and had become aware of the marvelous creations that some of the soldier painters' patients produced. These, as he learned from the works of Sigmund Freud, sprung from the unconscious mind. He felt that automatic art should have similar results, that they too should be marvelous creations, and that through these the unconscious mind of man could be discovered and understood. Groping his way thus, he finally defined pure psychic automatic work as surrealism. Before proceeding further, however, I must explain what is meant by the term unconscious mind. There are two regions of the mind. One part is conscious and the other unconscious. The unconscious mind contains all our forgotten memories right back to the womb. All experience is recorded in the mind. Out of all our experiences, we build up ideas or fantasies which are from all periods of our existence, from infancy onward. When these appear in consciousness, they are irrational, fantastic, and sometimes alarming in form. Of such material are our dreams made. Dreams are varied in content. Some are pleasurable, others nightmarish, and more often than not, are irrational. True automatic drawings and writings come from this lost part of the mind, and they possess the same characteristics. Most true surrealist creations seem utterly absurd, and yet, with an understanding of the story behind the irrationality, it will be found that every line, shape, color, and association of objects is deliberately chosen by the unconscious mind. They are selected for their symbolic value and for the telling of a story. Automatic creations are hieroglyphic inscriptions of memories buried deep in the unconscious mind. And there are as many different systems of hieroglyphs as there are persons. You now have, I hope, some idea of what lies behind the phrase unconscious mind, and therefore know with what automatic art deals. André Breton, after he had formed his group and initiated the surrealist movement that began group action, he and his followers experimented together in automatic production. Disaster, alas, soon followed, for the unrestrained eruption of unconscious impulses led to a tragic accident. Breton was not a trained psychoanalyst. He was, to some extent, in the position of a man who, having read a few books on surgery, sets out to perform an operation. Any patient would be lucky to escape damage from such untrained experimentation. Fortunately, André Breton was honest enough to realize this and gave up group work. After this, each individual worked on his own. The overstimulation of the unconscious mind by group action was thus avoided. André Breton now changed the aim of surrealism and directed his own baffled emotions and that of his followers outward. And from this time onward, a political trend was given surrealist activities. If the liberation of mankind cannot come from within, argued Breton, then it must come from outside. But how? Revolution was the answer. The breaking up of the whole social organism. We must smash our way out to liberty. Overnight, the movement became revolutionary and had returned back to the destructive attitude of Dadaism. The liberation of man from within, or in other words, the scientific approach to the understanding of man's mind, was relegated to a back seat. Nevertheless, surrealist art survived, for some of the artists were not interested in the political turn of events. They were only interested in automatic art. Automatic art is easy enough to do. Every time you take up a pencil and begin scribbling, while waiting at a telephone for a call, and your thoughts are not concentrated on what you are scribbling, you are drawing automatically. You are not consciously aware of what your hand is creating. You are not in a trance, but your mind is not consciously interfering with what your mind is making. Your hand is making the pencil do. What you do in that way is automatic and very similar to the way a surrealist drawing or painting is done. The puzzle to most people is how a skillfully finished surrealist work can be produced automatically without the conscious mind taking part in the production. Freedom from conscious interference, to some degree, can be attained through practice in this form of automatic scribbling. But full freedom from conscious interference can only be brought about by a method devised by myself during a research into the psychology of the so-called normal man. This, of course, cannot be elaborated here. Time does not permit. But when such automatic creations are produced, they have certain qualities which are so vital and forceful that they inevitably elicit an emotional response in the onlooker, sometimes of pleasure, sometimes disturbing, and at times of antagonism, which can be quite violent in character. All is not surrealist art, however, that is fantastic or bizarre. Much so-called surrealist art is not automatically done, but is consciously fabricated. For this reason, surrealist art has frequently been brought into disrepute. People sense the artificiality and dislike it. In the case of true automatic art, here too the first impression may be that of displeasure. The shock of the strange newness of the creation may at first displease, but with closer acquaintance, after the effect of the shock has worn off, appreciation begins to develop. Many true automatic creations, even so, are beautiful, even though unusual and surprising in appearance. During an exhibition of some of my works in London, one visitor was particularly enraged at a certain painting. He spent a long time in the gallery and came back again and again to the picture that enraged him. In the end, he liked that painting so much that he wanted to buy it, only it was not for sale. His first response was one of fear. After he had had time to recover from that emotion, he was able to absorb from the work an experience which finally made him want to possess the painting. It is human nature to push away anything new that approaches us for the first time. So I warn any of you who may be seeing works of this kind for the first time not to be put off by your immediate reaction. The unconscious part of one mind will speak, as it were, to that of another, deep answering deep, and the response will be automatic. Further, it is not necessary to understand the meaning of the painting or drawing to enjoy it. Simply look. Enjoy it if you can, or, if it repulses you, accept that emotional response. Don't fight it. Then go back to the work again and then again. Surrealism has widened the aesthetic horizon by establishing a new conception of art, namely, that of the value of the marvelous and of the beauty of irrational thought and creation. It is true the surrealists were not aware at the beginning that the unconscious was actually speaking through art, but nevertheless they knew, as all artists throughout the ages have known, that art was a medium of communicating the thoughts of the inner self. The surrealists presented to the world a visible manifestation of the creative activity of the unconscious. Not only is the vitality in a true surrealist creation greater than that which will usually be found in traditional modes of art expression, but the automatic artist develops also an individual sense of rhythm, balance, appreciation of pattern and form, and a peculiarly personal attitude to the use of color. The variations are as numerous as the population of this world, for each person is the product of his or her own particular reservoir of experiences. Such variety is not to be found in traditional schools of painting, ancient or modern. It could not be so, for these works are created only within the limits imposed by traditional habit-bound thought. The work of surrealism will go on, for the liberation of man is an emotional urge within each one of us, and one that in the end cannot be denied. As we become more emotionally and creatively conscious, we bring the day of our deliverance nearer. The creative urge is within each one of us. It is part of a biological rhythm, and therefore it becomes a biological necessity that it should find full expression. Only to the degree that that creative urge within us is liberated shall we experience individual freedom. Surrealism, by accepting the true worth of the personal side of creation, has helped in establishing a readiness to accept the fact that fantasy is a universal and legitimate activity that all have a right to enjoy. It is fighting for the establishment of art as a natural means of expression for all, as opposed to the idea that it belongs to a talented few. We are all potential artists, having within us a divine spark that can ignite the creative flame. We all wish to create, whether we know it or not. Ultimately, the automatic or unconscious drive behind creative effort will be fully recognized as the power behind art. It is only in so far as an artist is able to express himself completely in his painting that he becomes great. Surrealism is but one of the many indications of the ever-mounting insistence on the liberation of man, for the freeing of mankind can only come through the releasing of the creative spirit within each one of us.
That was Dr. G.W. Palethorpe speaking from Vancouver on surrealism. Dr. Palethorpe, beside being England's foremost surrealist painter, is a distinguished psychologist and an authority on the treatment of delinquency. Dr. Palethorpe spoke to you in the series Mirror for Women. The speaker next Monday at this same time will be an English war bride giving her impressions of Canada. This is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.